The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the way I've been beginning these evenings, if there is any questions, I've been starting with a time for practice questions, just a few minutes, one or two practice questions. If there's anything about your practice you'd like to ask a question about, we can start with that. And if there's not, then we can just go into the talk.
The last time I was here, I asked you a question about taking a step forward and then feeling like I was going backward. And you had mentioned something about, you know, grooves in your brain.
Ruts, yes.
And it resonated. It really resonated with me. And I've been thinking about it a lot. And I've had this image of a very soft cloth, kind of smells really good, kind of just rubbing over my brain, smoothing out the grooves. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, because there's some uncertainty there.
What is the uncertainty?
Well, what will it be replaced with?
Ah. Who knows? You will know when it happens. So the practice around our habits, particularly ones that are strong, I mean, this is actually something I thought of talking about a little bit tonight, working with habits, particularly in daily life. As we begin to see the habits that we habitually get into, we see that a lot of the times they're not serving us very well. You know, that we have patterns of anger or patterns of frustration or irritation or impatience. And we actually see that these are not helping us live in our lives very well, and they actually don't feel very good. So the rubbing, which I think maybe you're referring to, the kind of, you know, I talked about investigation being like rubbing, just with a soft cloth, rubbing, contacting. It's like, you know, rather than trying to pick something apart, you know, figure it out, pull it apart, be violent with it. We get to know it by just contacting it, you know, just really meeting it. And so that's, I think, what you're referring to, the image about the soft cloth. And the willingness to just meet our patterns, just like, what's happening here? You know, what is this? Can we be curious about it? That kind of curiosity brings that softness, as opposed to that attitude of, what is this anyway, and how can I get rid of it? You know, that doesn't bring that softness. So if we bring more of a softness to the exploration, it allows us to begin to see what's happening. It allows us to begin to see how these patterns are put together. So we may see it from different perspectives, similar pattern coming up over and over again. The ones that are ruts like that, they tend to come up in lots of different ways, right? So, you know, you're in this situation and there it is, and you're in that situation and there it is. And so each time it comes up, it's like we're getting to see it from a slightly different perspective. And we get to learn something about the pattern. And the more we learn about it, the more the mind begins to understand how it is contributing to the pattern. So the mind begins to see how it's participating in, like, for instance, anger. You know, the mind begins to see how it's participating in that, spinning stories, you know, that they shouldn't have done that, you know, and we kind of end up in a loop because we find our brains, our minds are kind of feeding back and reinforcing the pattern. And when we see that, the mind begins to let go of that reinforcement. And what's left, often what's left when we let go of unwholesome patterns, when we let go of anger, for instance, non-anger may be the result. What's non-anger? It may be felt something like kindness or friendliness. So rather than trying to think about what's coming, or, you know, what is it going to be replaced with? Just be curious about what is here. And as it transforms, you will see that what it's transforming into is, you will get to see what it's transforming into, and you will also get to see that it's heading you in a better direction than those than the habit tends to. So, yeah. Thank you.
Actually, your question was a good introduction to what was on my mind, and I think you began to answer it. I have had a lifelong pattern of emotional eating, and something, well, I have two big emotional things. My daughter has a serious medical condition that's been diagnosed recently, and I had a relationship loss. And I'm finding that those two things make me very vulnerable, and I'm eating more, and I've been watching myself do that.
Yeah.
And understanding that, except that eating more is not really helping me. In fact, it's making it so I have to buy new clothes. But something I'm very curious about is that after I come here, generally I come on Monday evenings, and when I go home, it's really time to go to bed, and because I have to get up fairly early for work. But I find that I go home, and I want to turn on the television, and then I start eating.
Mm.
And after I've had this lovely experience here, which I always do, I mean, it doesn't make sense.
You know, this recognition that what our minds do doesn't make sense. You know, this is actually a pointer to the fact that, you know, our minds are not really under what we think of as our control. You know, if we had control of our minds would do things sensibly. But, you know, we find that our minds just do things basically because they've been conditioned. So, you know, it's and we sometimes find we see, you know, this isn't so helpful, and we still see ourselves engaging in it. It's like, why do I do this? Partly it's because what's driving it, the motivators that are driving it, are kind of below the level of your seeing. So it's kind of happening, the impulses are happening kind of at what we would call maybe the subconscious level. And this actually heads into the beginning of what I wanted to talk about. So I'll just start there. I'll just go ahead and start my talk, which partly is, you know, why does the practice help us, and how does it help us? And one of the ways it helps us, one of the ways it supports us, is that, you know, typically when we are engaging in the mess of our lives, you know, we're in the midst of things, there are, you know, kind of we have this notion of the sense of the subconscious, and that the subconscious is driving what we do. You know, this Freud talked about the subconscious, and it, you know, it's a brilliant concept, actually, and it's so resonant with what happens for us, that we don't see where these impulses are coming from. And when we don't see where they're coming from, it's like we're powerless over them. They're coming, they're conditioned, they're not random, these impulses that drive our behaviors. They're coming from how we were raised, you know, how our parents treated us, how we were with the kids in school. I mean, it's all kinds of conditions that have come together to make these habits kind of, the motivations of these habits come up. And what the difficulty is that typically with our usual way of being in the world, we don't see those motivations. We don't see where they're coming from. And part of the way that the meditation practice helps us, one of the ways it helps us, is that if we are willing to start observing our minds, if we're willing to start looking at, for instance, in your case, the pattern of having this emotional response and wanting to distract yourself, you know, wanting to distract yourself perhaps with the television and then perhaps with food, you know, to essentially what it's coming from is my take on this, just hearing you, is that there's some unpleasant feeling and your body, your mind wants to replace it with something pleasant. And food is pleasant, so you go to that. But you're not really seeing the unpleasantness. And you're not seeing that impulse to escape the unpleasantness. So if you can be willing to actually turn towards, what does it feel like to be here in this uncomfortable situation? What is that? What is happening here? You might begin, what seems to happen is that we begin to see how the mind struggles. We begin to understand how these impulses come up. You might see that urge to start eating before it gets too strong. You might actually see, oh, here's the uncomfortableness, and see that urge to get rid of it, to stop it, to shove it down by having some pleasant experience. You might actually see that. So what I find partly this practice does for us, what mindfulness does for us, is it begins to kind of lower the horizon of this, what we think of as the subconscious, so that those impulses that typically we think, why am I doing this? You know, we think, you know, what good is this? I see it's not helpful, but still I do it. The mindfulness begins to lower that horizon so that we can begin to see those triggers happening and may begin to have a little bit more choice about what's going on. If we can actually see that discomfort, be willing to hang out with it rather than flee from it. That's one piece of it, is that the practice supports our being willing to be with uncomfortableness as opposed to having to jump away from it. So if we can begin to be comfortable with that, then that impulse to flee from it, we may begin to see that and have a choice. You know, so we begin, part of what the practice introduces for us is a little bit of choice in those places where we tend to begin to engage in those patterns. So the practice unfolds in a couple of ways. First of all, often we find ourselves just in the rut. We find ourselves in the pattern. We find ourselves already doing those things. If that's what we're noticing, then we just, can we be aware of that? If we've woken up into that, can we notice that? Can we be aware of that? The more we kind of, the more we are willing to observe a pattern, the more we're willing to meet something, it seems to me that what seems to happen is that the more we're interested in observing a pattern like that, the mindfulness begins to begin to infiltrate that pattern like earlier and earlier in the process of the pattern's creation. So the pattern of anger or the pattern of, you know, irritation or the pattern of jumping away from something uncomfortable. That's the beginning of that pattern, you know, jumping away from something uncomfortable. If we're interested in observing them, then we begin to, the mindfulness begins to kind of infiltrate that before it gets so strong. And that's where we may begin to have a choice. So that's jumped into a little bit further into my talk. But so what I'd like to do now is to kind of come back to the beginning and cycle through. What I want to talk about today is, you know, working with the difficulties in daily life. You know, we practice on the cushion, we meditate, and a lot of people still you know, come and ask, well, you know, okay, I can gain some calm and some tranquility and some peacefulness in the sitting, but how do I work with this? I see it's useful. I see being mindful is useful. But how do I work this with this in the middle of the mess of my life? So that's the question I'd like to explore tonight. First, I'd like to look a little bit about the value of mindfulness and the value of practice, however we're doing it. Because if we're engaging in sitting meditation, for instance, and you know, you practice in the sitting posture and you close your eyes, and you may find from time to time, I mean, I certainly find there are times when the mind gets more calm and more quiet than others, but from time to time we may find the meditation brings some stillness, some peace, some ease. And that can begin to kind of overflow a little bit. You know, even if we just start our day with a little bit of calming, it can influence how we are in the rest of our day. And so we do begin to see when we practice that there's some impact on our lives, a little bit of that impact. But it's not so clear at times because, you know, here we are, we're sitting in meditation. Maybe we're able to notice something as it arises, you know, that we're sitting there and we notice an irritation arise. And because we're silent in meditation, our eyes are closed, we can observe that. We can recognize, how does this impact my body? You know, what's going on here? We can feel into the experience of irritation. When we're in our daily life, we're having a conversation with somebody, irritation arises, and we're still in the midst of that conversation. It's kind of hard to say, wait, stop. Stop the conversation. I need to feel into my body. I need to get the experience. That's not going to happen, right? I mean, that's not the way we are in our lives. So what does it mean? You know, what does it mean to bring this mindfulness into our daily lives? So the benefit of doing it is just what I pointed to a few moments ago, that when we get interested in being mindful in our daily lives, and particular around certain patterns, like I was suggesting, and this is one of the things that I suggest for people, is to pick something you're really interested in understanding about yourselves. Pick a pattern that happens for you a lot. I mean, we sometimes think, okay, I'm going to try to be mindful in my daily life. That means I'm going to be mindful all day long. That's my goal, to try to be mindful all day long. What I found is it's more helpful to pick some projects. And for myself, when I first started this, actually daily life practice was my very first meditation practice. I engaged with daily life practice before I ever started sitting meditation. And so I was interested in understanding my mind. And in particular, I was interested in understanding my anger. So I picked that as a project. I'd read in some book somewhere it was helpful. Rather than to try to be mindful all day, pick something specific. So I picked my anger. And I just said, anytime I get angry, I'm going to be aware of that. So that I was really interested in that. And that really helped. Having interest really supports that. And I'll come back to that part in a minute. But what this does, what this mindfulness does for us, is it does begin to help us to see where we're kind of getting lost, where we're going off. And it does, at times, perhaps even in the midst of a conversation, give us just a little bit of a window into, you know, getting ready to blurt something out. And the mindfulness is there, and it says, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that particular thing. So it gives us just this little window of choice when we can be aware, mindful in our daily lives. So that's the benefit of the mindfulness in our daily lives. Now, how to do it? It's hard. It's not an easy practice. You know how hard enough it is to practice when we're sitting silently with our eyes closed. We sit silently with our eyes closed and intend to be mindful. What happens? The mind wanders. So, you know, it's like even when we've got good conditions for cultivating mindfulness, the mind is not very cooperative. Just as you were saying, you know, it does pretty much what it wants to do. So it's a training. We train to come back. And with the sitting meditation, we have some cues. We have some reminders for ourselves. We're sitting silently with our eyes closed. We wake up arguing with somebody. And we recognize, oh, wow, okay, I was going to be paying attention to my breath. I'm not actually arguing with that person. I'm sitting here quietly with my eyes closed. Can I come back to the breath? So we have some cues. The body in this posture is a cue. Our eyes closed is a cue. The staying with the breathing, if that's how we're practicing, usually we have some kind of practice that helps us remember. All of these things help us to remember when we're in sitting meditation. And you see even how hard it is in sitting meditation to remember. When we move into daily life, we lose all of those supports. It's much harder. So, to not be too hard on yourself about how hard it is. It is a challenging practice. So I like to suggest for people, you know, along the lines of picking something specific. One of the main supports, one of the main things about mindfulness in daily life, what I find is that it not become such a huge project for us. You know, that we think, okay, I want to practice mindfulness in daily life, and it's like we pick up our backpack of mindfulness and we're carrying it around with us. It's like, yes, I'm going to be mindful. It's like we've picked up this extra thing that we're trying to do, and it gets pretty heavy. You know, I have people tell me, you know, I don't have time to be mindful in my daily life. You know, it's like I've got so many other things to do, I don't have time to be mindful. And that's because of the way we try to engage with mindfulness in daily life as another doing. We try to engage with mindfulness in daily life as something else that we're doing. And if that's how we're engaging with it, it often falls by the wayside because we do have many things to do. So one of the things I like to suggest, and this we can practice in sitting meditation as well as in daily life, is to begin to get familiar with what it feels like when we remember about mindfulness. That moment itself, you know, that moment when you wake up. You've been lost in thought, and here you are, mindful. You know, when you're in sitting meditation, that happens several times, at least, usually, throughout the sitting, right? That moment of remembering happens. How hard was that moment to do? You didn't do it, actually. You can't do it. It just happens. So if you can get familiar with that moment, that quality, that remembering of mindfulness, the good thing about that moment is that it doesn't take effort. And also, when the more you get familiar with that moment, the more you actually recognize what is it like to become aware. So that's part of the exploration. What is it like to become aware? The more you can recognize that, the more you'll see actually throughout your day that experience happens way more than you would have thought. That light moment of mindfulness just coming back and you knowing what's happening while it's happening, that happens a lot. We just usually, what happens in that moment usually is that we pick up on what we have noticed in that moment. We pick up on, you know, so here we are, we're walking down the street, and a bird flies by, and whew, our attention goes right to that bird, and we notice that bird, but then we start thinking about birds. We get interested in the bird, and we start, you know, what kind of bird was that? And we lose the fact that we've actually become aware because we start thinking about what we have become aware of. So this beginning to get familiar with this moment of remembering begins to help us to recognize when that moment happens through our day. And that's a practice that doesn't take a lot of effort. And I often recommend, so when you notice that you've become mindful, you're like, okay, there I am, I'm mindful. Just notice what you're aware of in that moment. It's often pretty light. You know, it's not... You know, there's not a lot to notice there. I mean, you're noticing seeing, or you're noticing moving, or you're noticing reaching, or you're noticing chewing, whatever's happening. You just become aware of what you've noticed. And this practice can begin to weave a thread of mindfulness through your day. Now, just in and of itself, it doesn't seem like it's doing much. Because a lot of the times these moments of mindfulness are just, you know, they're waking up when you're walking across the street, or you're reaching for a glass, or you're having breakfast, and it's just like, okay, so I've become mindful, you know, why? What's the point of being mindful of chewing breakfast? Well, the point of it is it reinforces the pattern, it reinforces the quality of mindfulness, which, as we talked about a little while ago, is helpful when we begin to turn that quality towards difficulty in our lives. We begin to have more choice. So that exploration around noticing that moment that we're remembering, noticing that moment, that itself can be pretty hard. So sometimes I like to suggest that, you know, in our daily lives, much as for sitting meditation, we give ourselves some kind of a cue to help ourselves remember. Those of you who've attended the Daily Life Retreat have heard this, have heard me talk about this. Finding something that happens regularly through your day, something that happens regularly through your day that you do, say, 3 or 4 times an hour, and see if you can resolve to remember when that thing happens. It might be standing up, it might be going through doorways, it might be reaching for a glass of water, it might be clicking send for an email, it could be any number of things. And having some kind of a task. So like when we're sitting in meditation, we have perhaps the task to be mindful of our breathing. That task itself helps us notice when we haven't been mindful of the breathing. And likewise, having some kind of a cue, something that happens regularly through our day, begins to help us recognize when we haven't been mindful. So it's a little kind of tool, it's a little kind of trick that can help us to recognize, yeah, I haven't been mindful for the last 3 hours. This is, you know, we're going through our day and we're having lunch, and we remember. Something makes us remember, oh, I was supposed to pay attention when I stood up, and I stood up at least 5 times in the last 3 hours, and I didn't remember once. That moment when you notice that you've forgotten, that's kind of like the moment of noticing, oh, I'm awake in sitting meditation, and I've forgotten about my breath. That moment when you remember that you've forgotten, that moment is a moment of mindfulness coming back in that very moment. And the task, the cue, the mindfulness cue has helped you to have a moment like that. So having these cues can support helping us remember that we've forgotten. It's not so important, actually, that you actually remember the cue. Although if you keep resolving, you keep saying, you know, oh, I haven't remembered it for the last 3 hours, I'm just going to keep trying. If you just resolve, every time you notice that you've forgotten, just resolve, I'm just going to keep trying, then you'll get more moments of remembering that you've forgotten, and you'll also start to notice when you're standing up or when you're reaching for something. And as you play with this kind of a thing, you'll begin to get little bits of little blips of mindfulness through your day. that begin to weave a thread of mindfulness through your day. And this is kind of the, I would call this the training wheels practice. You know, it doesn't sound like much, you know, talking about it, but it's very helpful to begin to get us familiar with what is it actually like in the midst of our day to be mindful and aware. What is it actually like? And then the mindfulness can begin to actually help to inform us as we are engaged in our lives. So the other thing that I think is very helpful is the thing I pointed to earlier, picking something that you're really curious about, understanding. The curiosity itself helps it not feel too heavy. The curiosity generates interest. Curiosity generates energy. And so if you can be curious about, well, I'm really curious about why my mind does that, not with the agenda to get rid of it, although that may happen. It may fall away as we get more and more familiar with it. But it's the interest, it's the understanding that comes as we pay attention that helps it to fall away on its own. It's not something that we do. We don't make these patterns disappear. It's that gentle rubbing that Stacy was talking about is kind of like gently wears away those patterns slowly. Very much this practice, to me, this practice of particularly observing patterns in my daily life, you know, picking something that I'm interested in exploring, it's a months, years long process. But we begin to see, we begin to understand, I began to experience transformation around particular patterns. So for instance, around anger, you know, one of the things I saw is every time I saw it, you know, one of the first things I noticed was that when I first recognized that I was caught in anger, I was really angry. I was like in a rage. I was so angry, I was frozen at my computer. I wasn't functioning anymore. And my recognition was, wow, yeah, okay, angry. I know that I'm angry. And, you know, I had no idea what to do with it. And besides, I was in the midst of work. So it's like, well, I don't know what I do with this. I guess I go back to work. So that's one of the things in terms of working with these patterns. You know, when you become aware of one of those patterns, it's like, what is obvious to you? What's clear about it? And then just go on with your day, if it's possible. I mean, for me, I was caught in a rage. I recognized it. And in retrospect, I saw, you know, just the mindfulness of it helped me to be able to put it aside enough to be able to go back to work. So that mindfulness actually had a benefit. I didn't consciously notice that benefit in that moment. But in retrospect, looking back on it, I began to see, oh, when that mindfulness happened, it actually gave me a little bit of wiggle room around that difficulty. And then continuing to observe the pattern, you know, I saw it, as I said, the mindfulness begins to infiltrate the pattern, and we begin to notice it happen more quickly. So I began to notice that around the anger. I saw that the mindfulness broke in. I became aware of the anger like earlier in the stage. It hadn't escalated to rage. It was more like normal anger. More like, you know, yeah, okay, yep, I'm angry. Yeah, I can set this aside and go back to my day. So again, one of the things around observing patterns in daily life is not about, oh, I notice I'm angry, let me stop everything, let me pay attention to what's going on, let me spend 5 minutes with this. If you have that space in your life, great, do it. If you can, if you're in your office or at home and something comes up, the pattern arises and you have that space, take that time. But often we are in the midst of the next thing that we have to do. And so just go on with your day. this has been one of my biggest learnings about daily life practice, to not try to hold on to the mindfulness. Take it in those moments. Meet what's happening. And particularly around patterns, just can you notice, you know, what's obvious about this pattern in this moment? Each time, you'll get many opportunities with these patterns. They come back over and over again. So you'll get many opportunities to look at them. Just take that moment as a moment of, here's this instance of this pattern. What's happening here? Just a little bit of data gathering. This is one way that one of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, talks about working with patterns, that each time we meet a pattern, it's like we get a little bit of data, just a little bit of data about that particular pattern. And over time, over the course of seeing that pattern, we get a little bit different perspective on it another time, a little bit different perspective on it. And over time, the mind begins to have a clearer picture. It's like each little bit of data gives you a little bit of the puzzle. You don't have to figure out how that puzzle goes together. The mind is very good at that. So just gather the data. The putting the information together seems to happen more organically. We don't really have to figure it out. So this really, it's a light touch, it's meeting it, it's letting go. Meeting it, it's letting go. It's not meeting it and shoving it aside. It's not meeting it and trying to repress. It's meeting it and moving on with as much skillfulness as possible in that moment. So for me, this style of practice in daily life is much lighter. It's not like I've picked up the backpack of mindfulness and I'm trying to carry it around with me. It's like, here I am, I'm meeting this moment. What can I see about this moment? And then go on with my day. Here it is again, and then go on with my day. If you have this intention towards curiosity about meeting patterns and being interested in this moment of remembering, you will notice it accumulates, and you will have more and more mindfulness through your day without having it be a big, heavy task, a big, heavy chore. So those are my thoughts that I wanted to share with you about practicing in our day, and I just like to open it up for questions and comments or anything. Yeah, do you have the mic still? Yeah.
Hi. I was a little bit... one of the things I have felt is that there is a part of the mind that is always making up stories, like narrating itself, creating a narrative of what's going on and trying to shield yourself up. Like it makes a person isolated from what's really happening, but it's always moving to the past or creating a nice story for the future and having expectations like that. So I have felt that to be specifically exhausting in a sense.
And yes.
And it usually is kind of encouraged if you are having to talk a lot with other people or having to read books or having to speak a lot and explaining yourself to other people. How would you think a mindfulness practice can help in making the thought processes and the narration lighter in the mind?
So that's a great question. Partly you can just begin to recognize, if you've woken up, it sounds like you're beginning to wake up into the mind doing this. You're noticing it doing this.
So it was not as strong before. So because I have to do a lot more talking and socializing and stuff like that recently. So it's something that has happened recently. I don't like that thing. So that's why I'm here. Basically.
I see. So the conditions of your life have created more of this kind of rehearsing, it sounds like. And so when you notice that your mind is doing that, often when the mind goes off into that kind of a pattern frequently, there's some kind of emotion that's driving it. You know, something like, I need to look good, or I need to...
It's a kind of self-defense, basically.
A self-defense. Okay, so I need to protect myself. Okay, so that self-defense, there's a feeling to that. That there's a feeling underneath that, the pattern of thoughts, that maybe is a sense of, how do I protect myself? So what does it feel like if you notice? So when you notice, or if you do notice the mind in that state, you might just check into that self-defense feeling. And see, I mean, so first thing is just to notice that those thoughts are happening. And do they happen when you're alone more? I mean, it sounds like it's happening kind of when you're in a...
In more of a social situation, when you are going to talk with somebody or explaining stuff like that.
So as you're heading to those situations.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of almost like
preparation. Or coming out of those situations.
You're heading into it. You're preparing. Yes. So as you're heading into those kind, one thing that I found interesting to explore first is that preparation actually helpful? So my mind used to catastrophize, kind of, you know, like it thought I needed to prepare for all the possible negative outcomes that would possibly happen. And it would create the scenario, and it would decide, okay, well, if that scenario happens, how am I going to meet that one? And it would create that whole future. And then, oh, what about that one? What if that one happens instead? You know, you create that whole scenario and figure out what's my response going to be then? And what I began to see as I paid attention to this is that the vast majority of these scenarios never happened. And even if one of them did, even if the thing that I predicted happened did happen, my capacity to respond in the way I told myself that's how I should respond wasn't really there in the moment. And so I began to see, I mean, the first thing I began to see is just, you know, the waste of time. It was just such a waste of time. And so the mind began to understand it as a non-helpful pattern. So that's one thing, is just to begin to explore, is it actually helpful to have these thoughts? Or, you know, you could play with seeing, can you let go of it? You know, you're going into that situation and, you know, the feeling of needing to defend yourself is there. Can you just hang out with that feeling and see if you can let go of the pull to, I need to figure out what to say, I need to figure out how to present myself. See if you can let go of that and see what happens in the situation without the preparation. You know, just kind of, that's kind of throwing yourself into the present moment and see what happens. You know, so you could play with that also. But I did find that actually reflecting on how useful are these thoughts, you know, that my guess is that they're probably not actually that useful. They deluded us into thinking that they're useful. You know, that the delusion is bought into that, thinking that, yes, you know, this is the way. I mean, I lived that way for so much of my life. And, you know, just like it was useless. Just useless. So, but you also, one thing you could play with too, another place to explore this, is when you have time on your own, perhaps, you know, in the evening, after a day, you know, if you remember, you could, one way to explore this kind of challenging situation is to kind of use a reflection in a meditative way. So find yourself in silence. And I've taught this, I think, in this room, but I think it's probably been more than a year since I taught this in this room. Find yourself in a place where you can be quiet and let yourself settle for, say, 5 minutes, and then call into mind a scenario. Allow yourself to bring into mind that situation that you're walking into. And then see what the feelings are, where you have a little bit more space to actually feel them. Because, you know, as you're walking into that meeting or that social situation, there's not a lot of time to actually feel those things. So you can take the time to explore those feelings so you're in the sitting, just all basically you need to do is to create the scenario in your mind, imagine it, and then let go of the scenario and feel the feelings. See what's bubbled up, see what's happened. Perhaps that feeling of defensiveness in this case, maybe that comes up. Maybe then you can actually meet that feeling, see what's happening there, get more comfortable with being with that feeling. And then as you get more comfortable with being with it in that more isolated, but kind of practice with it when you're alone, you may be able to be a little bit more comfortable with it as you're in the situation in real life. So that's another thing to explore. Just a few thoughts. Yeah.
Hi. I was really thinking about when you were talking about this the situation of curiosity about something, and I wanted just to share something that's worked for me and maybe to help me take it to the next level too. My curiosity was around irritation, that different from anger, but irritation that could lead to anger.
Uh-huh.
But I felt like I was just being irritated a lot, and it wasn't, and I didn't like it. And I didn't like that I was being so irritated. And I started trying to pay attention to when I was irritated, I guess noticing what was irritating me.
Uh-huh.
And it had a lot to do with noise. I'm very noise sensitive. So it became sort of a trigger for me that there'd be a loud noise interrupting something. I'm a writer, so quietness is very important to me. And it would kind of break my train of thought. And anyway, as I noticed it, I had been attaching sort of this irritation to it, of pushing it away. And when you just, and part of your talk was that you're just noticing it and not pushing it away, you're just kind of meeting it and just sort of exploring it. It changed my feeling toward it.
Yes.
And I started noticing that more, that how I could notice how I could, I'd still hear the noise, but that I wasn't attaching that, oh, crap, there's that noise again. You know what I mean? That it just,
and
I mean,
that's like, the bigger interruption, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, so you're writing, there's the noise, and then there's, oh, there's that noise. The noise is there and gone often, and you've picked up on it and actually added to it. So that's the kind of, that's a, what we call like the second arrow.
Right. Yes.
There's been something that's happened, in this case, a sound that's perceived as unpleasant. And then there's this extra irritation that's adding unpleasantness. And you may even start thinking about it. Like, why do they have to have that dog that's barking next door? And what can I do about this? And how can I? And you've given yourself a huge, you know, your mind has created the distraction.
Right.
It's not so much the sound. It's magnified the distraction. Yes, yes.
So my question is, I do have this awareness now. I've been more trying to just to meet it, notice it. Yes, it's a noise. Yes, I was distracted. I don't attach any now the emotion to it. I try then to go back to my work or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And I really have been noticing I'm much less irritated about it.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to take that to the next step, and I don't seem to know how to then do that. And so once you have mastered, which I think I have, sort of the noticing it and not attaching the sort of the, you're trying to, back to the irritation of not being so irritated about it, or not being irritated at all, actually, just more noticing it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What's the next level beyond that?
Well, what's the problem?
It's like noticing the irritation. I don't even want to be noticing the irritation. I want to move beyond that. That the noise is not even an issue anymore.
Okay, so there is still irritation then. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so there's the noise.
I guess not as,
Okay, so you're not as irritated.
Yeah, I guess what I
guess
a little irritated. I don't know, but it's like, see, but noticing it, okay, I don't know. It's like, I want to kind of get beyond that. I want to get beyond noticing whatever the irritation is. I want to just be tranquil with it.
Okay, so there is still a little, it sounds like there's still a little around it.
Yeah, it's, I guess because I still am getting distracted.
Yes.
I'm aside from earplugs, you know what I mean? But it's like, I want to not... Maybe I'm still attaching too much.
Well, there's. It sounds like there's just a little bit. I mean, it sounds like it's really diminished.
Yes.
So that's wonderful. So now the practice is to do the same thing with this lower level of irritation. It's just much quieter now. Mm-hmm. So, oh, there's that level of irritation. It sounds like you've kind of, you're still at the place of, I want to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So
I have to relax. Okay, thank you.
And we have time maybe for one more, if there's one more question. Yeah, in the back, yeah. A comment,
Yes, now it's green.
Okay, there we go.
I just wanted to commend you on your sensitivity or awareness of going home and leaving, you know, this virginal palace, if you will. Yeah. This no-ego palace and going home and slipping back into old patterns. I often, you know, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about the laughing Buddha, who would probably laugh with you and say, my child, relax. You know, it's like at Max's Cafe, eat, you'll feel better. It is a body. You know, St. Francis always groused about his body. St. Paul, of course, was conflicted, you know, had something like colitis or something all his life. It's a pretty crappy body overall. It's 10 trillion cells. It's here for a while. And it's a nice place for our soul to hang out. But it's only a journey, you know. And so some of this, I think, is a rational, reasonable thing to do, to enjoy an ice cream cone, to enjoy a soft cushion, when we're younger, to enjoy the intimacy of another person with ourselves, whatever. So, you know, we tend to... Maybe we tend to judge. And that only adds to it. I mean, if I look at you, I think you, this lady certainly has no weight problem, per se. I might, but you certainly don't. And we all get, you know, as I tell people, we're like trees. You know, we grow to a certain height, and we're thin. And then as we get older, the trunk gets thicker. I can attest to that. But anyway, I wanted to commend you on your awareness. Because that's really, I think, one of the core principles that our teacher is bringing us here with is the awareness. So thank you. Thank you for telling us.
Yeah, it is the awareness that is most important, actually. And the non-judging is also helpful. And we learn to see without judgment when things are helpful and when things are not helpful. So we begin to learn, you know, it's like it's a very natural learning that when I engage in these ways, the mind suffers. And the mind begins, you know, it's not a judgment. It's not about judgment. It's about recognizing these things are helpful and these things are not helpful. So we need to stop. Thank you.